The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Yeah.
Beyond.
Beyond.
Whoa.
Beyond.
No. Beyond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See?
Anyway, it's beyond. It's still happening. We keep doing it every week, and it keeps on going. This train can't be stopped, though it stops once a week. When we stop doing it, we only do it once a week. It's not a continuous show. Anyway, this is episode 477. I'm looking at the wrong camera. Hey, everybody. I'm Max Scoville, and I'm joined by Brian Altano.
Hi.
Jonathan Dornbush.
I think you looked at me when you said Brian, but hi.
And Brian Altano.
Fun day Mondays.
No, it's Marty Sleva.
What?
Anyway, what's going on? We're going to talk about a bunch of stuff today. Resident Evil 7 is out. Yakuza 0 is out. Kingdom Hearts 2.8, is that out yet?
Kingdom Hearts HD 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue is out, yes.
Oh my God, I'm so glad you're here.
We're just going to take short naps while you talk about that.
Feel free. Yeah.
There's a bunch of stuff out there in the wild. We got plenty of stuff to talk about. Let's start with Resident Evil 7.
Yeah,
Raise your hand if you're brave enough to play that game.
If you're listening at home, a raised hand sounds like a swift wind of arms going up.
For the audio drama, that's the sound of a hand being raised.
Man, I'm so happy we got this game.
Yeah.
This is like it's such a triumph and a treat to get a game like this. We were really worried about this game, honestly, for a while, because I think anything with the number 7 in it is sort of like, it's just not great. I think.
What about the movie 7?
Furious 7.
Furious 7, Final Fantasy 7.
No, I mean, like, in terms
of, like, Seventh Samurai, one of the greatest films of all time. Seventh Seal, also one of the greatest films of all time.
Seventh Heaven, 7 minutes in Heaven.
Yeah, by the time games or even movies get to the seventh iteration, they typically either reboot or rebrand or just drop the number entirely.
Yeah, I was actually pointing this out in the Podcast Beyond Facebook group the other day. Plug, plug, plug. You should join that. Episode 7 wasn't actually called that. It was called The Force Awakens, and only in the crawl did it say Star Wars Episode 7. Everywhere else, it just said The Force Awakens, because I think they didn't want to go in with a lot of baggage. And when we first saw the reveal trailer for this game at E3 last year, and we saw it said Resident Evil, I was really excited. And then it said 7, and I was like, why'd you do that?
Yeah.
But it turns out that this game is a lot more new than I think the title would let it on to be. And I think that, like, before we even get into, like, how much we love it, I just really want to commend Capcom on the fact that, like, I've had a rocky relationship with them the last few years. I think gamers have in general. If you're a Mega Man fan, you've probably been upset or angry, or, you know, just completely defeated by where that franchise.
Oh, wow, that took a those waters started to rush.
I'm starting to get sad. I mean, it's just been a rough few years, and I think, like, they've made some real bad decisions when it comes to the Resident Evil franchise in the past. It's been sort of all over the place quality wise, but this game is such an awesome step in a new direction for them. And I don't think it's like a sort of a reboot on the level of, like, say, Resident Evil 4. I think it is in its own way. Just a fantastic step for the franchise.
And this could be your first Resident Evil. This is not, you don't need to know the baggage of 6+ Resident Evil games of lore that ultimately by 6 was out of control and dumb.
Yeah.
Like 6 was just straight up dumb and lost all the core tenets of the series. Whereas this, its main change is first person, which is the thing I was super worried about. Mm-hmm. I got over that within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And realized, like, oh no, this did keep a lot of those core tenets of inventory management, of puzzles, of exploring an environment, of, I think this has better enemies with more character in terms of the Baker family than any of the core villains in Resident Evil.
Yeah, and this is a franchise that has experimented with so many different perspectives. I mean, it started with fixed camera angles. It went on to fixed camera angles in pre-rendered backgrounds with Remake. There was an over-the-shoulder third person, a bunch of games in 4, 5, and 6, and Umbrella Chronicles. Mm-hmm. And then there was, like, light gun games and, you know, just – it's been – there's been like third person online shooter, first person shooters, like, but this really feels like Resident Evil, and it feels like the first time I played Resident Evil back on the original PlayStation. Mm-hmm. And just that feeling of terror, that uncertainty of turning a corner.
Yep.
I'm playing it on PS4 Pro in 4K, and the way the lighting works in this game is so phenomenal. And I when I think of like HDR, I usually think of like if you watch something like The Man in the High Castle, they shoot a lot of stuff on that show in HDR on Amazon Prime. It's basically like very brightly backlit. So you're like, oh my God, that guy's standing in broad daylight. It looks amazing. This is a very dark game tonally and just sort of like lighting wise. So when there are little peaks of light, when you see a flickering light bulb down the hall, it looks gorgeous. Like, yeah, this game looks legitimately great on the PS4 Pro. And it's just really fun to play. It's like probably the scariest game I've played in a very long time. And there's not in like a like consistently disturbing kind of horrifying kind of way, but there's just this like uneasy tremoring tension that is constantly happening in that game, where just even when I'm doubling back on areas, it's sort of in the way the first one, when you backtracked in the original Resident Evil and you're a dog jumped through a window for the first time,
yeah,
and it shook you to your core.
Yeah.
Like, games have been trying to do stuff like that for a long time, and I don't think they've really nailed it the way this one has been able to do that again.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm. Kind of reminds me of like in Remake, the first time you enter a hall and the Crimson Heads are back. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, this is new. This is different.
Yeah.
And you have these little, like, sort of the estate in this game, the Baker estate, has these little sections that almost feel like the way that they prowl the sections, the Bakers, feels like little nemesis.
Yes. Nemesis. Yeah. I was just going to talk about that. Like, I love the fact that you have stalkers in this game that sort of just like corner you, and then you get rid of them and they come back because they're base of effectively like super mutants. I won't get into the lore too much because I think everyone should play this, but it is such a, like, the new setting, I think it just works so well too, of like this, like, just this wet gross house.
I played like for a second, just the thing leading up to the demo, basically. Start out a car. That is probably the most realistic afternoon I've seen in a video game.
I really like that.
Yeah, it's kind of odd. I was playing it just on kind of regular vanilla PS4 with no special 4K HDR or anything, but just looking at it being like, this is exactly what I want to see in HDR. The use of lighting in it and the use of color is, it manages to be that kind of, not quite the golden hour you get in movies, but that sort of like, oh, twilight is just around the corner. Like, night is almost here. Yeah. Almost that menacing, like, hurry up and get your daytime stuff done feeling, which is something that it's a thing that I always think of, like, Sunday afternoons when I'm like, ah, crap, I gotta go back to work tomorrow. Not that I don't like my job or anything, but, that feeling of like, oh, your weekend is dwindling, like that kind of winter afternoon or summer, you know, it nails that time of day perfectly. Mm-hmm. And then you look over and there's like a pile of body parts and you're like, oh God, everything's going to get really bad. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think what I love about the horror in this game is that it's unsettling in a sort of non-traditional, non-sort of hokey way. Mm-hmm. There's something about it that, like, very much reeks of Texas Chainsaw Massacre to me. Probably. Which, when you watch that movie, the family dynamics for sure. But the idea of like if you were to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre and then look at the motives for the characters and ask why, you wouldn't have an answer. And that's what I kind of love about the villains in this game, is that when you're playing a game about a ghost, it's like, oh, the woman lost in her life and then her baby became, it's like
classic ghost story.
Yeah. there's like the toy train that goes by and it makes that noise and it's like dang, dang, dang. And you're like, oh great, there's that trope again. Mm-hmm. But this doesn't feel like that. This is just like, oh, a bunch of gross ass backwoods dudes want to eat guts at lunch. And because of that, they do mutant stuff to their buddies and their friends and sisters and crap. So, it's severely disturbing. I think it's like, it's so awesome that we have this game. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm gonna slowly crawl through it and then go back and play, I think, specific sections in PSVR.
I imagine there's a lot of stuff that's buried in there too.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Jonathan, are you a big Resident Evil guy?
No, I've really only ever played, I started with the remake on GameCube. That was my first entry into it. And then I played a little bit of 4 and then a little bit of 6.
Yeah.
But I haven't started this game. I played the demo and I played the demo in, like, VR as well. I cannot wait to start this game. Yeah. And especially what excited me was you talking about how it sort of has this general sense of unease and tension to it. Like, that is the type of horror that I love. I mean, I hate it, but I love it.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
And that is what I am looking forward to. Like, I don't need a ton of... There will be jump scares, of course, but, like, that is what not the only thing I want.
You know, like, when you're watching, like, The Blair Witch and they wake up that one day and there's just, like, piles of rocks?
Yes.
And you're like, well, that's weird and it's terrifying, but I don't really know why, because there's nothing... I'm not afraid of rocks. It's a stupid thing to be afraid of. This game does stuff like that a lot, where, like, you'll turn the corner and you're like, is that a leg sculpture? All right. Well, I don't like this hallway.
But I have to keep going, so I'll keep going. Yeah, that's the
I think
thing
the puzzle elements are really smart, too.
Yeah.
See, that sucks, because, like, I really like puzzles, and I like environmental stuff, but I don't like stuff that's legitimately scary.
I think you can build a tolerance to horror. I mean, the thing is, like, you appreciate
you just eat a bunch of pills or something. Yeah.
But you've been on, like, on a horror movie kick, and you appreciate horror designs. Like,
So that's kind of I've always been like a big wuss. Like, I've always been not good at being scared. Like, I don't enjoy being scared, but I love monsters.
Yeah.
And I love horror as a, like, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of nuances to horror that I think are fantastic. And it sucks because Resident Evil is finally returning to being a proper survival horror game. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of wishing it was the thing where they're like, oh no, it's a zombie shark, or like, oh, you've got to, you know, do this weird action stuff, or there's like a, you know, chainsaw man chasing you through a village. Like, I kind of wish that it was this presentation and this execution, but leaning more in towards the campier side of things. Yeah. And it sounds like this is not the campy side of things. This is legitimate, like, oh, you know, go to the bathroom inside of your pants horror, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the campiness comes through accidentally, I think, through like the character models and the acting a little bit. It's still a little like kind of wooden at times. And
I mean,
some of the models actually look sort of puppety at times like that. But I think that, like, I mean, we've all been gushing over PT for years now and how we'll never delete it and how we've got to bring it from system to system. But I think that this is exactly what we were looking for in that game. Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, I think that sort of, like, there's a mystery here, but there's layers to it. And I think people are going to be pulling stuff out of this game for a long time.
Yeah, the opening 20, 25 minutes is definitely, like, heavily PT inspired.
Yes.
And then it sort of finds this really great balance of PT / horror games in 2017 plus some of those core elements that we really loved about the original.
Yeah. I think the video cassette angle is brilliant.
Yeah, and you get a bunch of those throughout the game that are sort of optional, that give you a lot of backstory and sort of teach you about the mansion, certain secrets.
Like, I think it's a genuinely brilliant and horrifying loop to find a videotape, play it on a TV, watch what happens to these characters, see how they open up a certain door or a secret way, go in yourself and be like, when's the other shoe going to drop on me? Like, I just saw those guys bite the bullet and what's going to happen with me. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Resident Evil as a series is like, it showed up right when I was first kind of getting into more, you know, more adult games. Mm-hmm. And there was that kind of initial thing where I looked at it and I'm like, oh, it's scary and it's a frightening thing and that's about it. And then as I've gotten older, I've been like, oh, it's got the guts of a puzzle game. But and then there's kind of the, you know, the mechanics of action. It's not like it's unfair. It's just like, it, you know, resources are sparse and you have to kind of like think on your feet. And it's, you know, they do kind of have clunky controls. But in this case, I'm excited about getting to the point where it's less just wandering around with, you know, with no weapon, where you're actually kind of like, where you have to fight something. Like, I'm curious about fighting a boss in this game. And it's interesting because there has been that, like, that sort of renaissance of horror games lately, like Amnesia and, you know, Outlast. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where you're not really fighting anything. Like, you're not kicking anything. I mean, Alien Isolation to a certain degree.
Yes.
Right.
Where it's like, and it's kind of cool to see Resident Evil kind of circle back and be like, hey, we kind of invented survival horror where, you know, you're limited in what you can do, but here's something that still limits what you can do, but you can do something. You're not entirely powerless.
And it does that really great way of, like, do I run past these enemies and conserve my ammo, or do I stand my ground and fight? If you stand your ground and fight, you can get headshots and you can take them down in a couple shots.
Yeah.
But you're also like, well, I know bosses around the corner, and these bosses are, like, hard as hell. So, like, do I want to save it for that?
Which I love. And I love the saving system is very evocative of the old type.
Yeah. You have the item box. Yep. You have sort of light crafting where you choose whether you want to craft first aid spray or whether you want to craft bullets.
Yep.
I don't understand how you're crafting bullets.
Yeah,
don't worry about it.
I mean, you have to sort of leave your logic at the door with a thing like this.
Yeah,
you didn't take that class in high school?
I didn't actually. No, I took line dancing in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I can see that being more useful.
Fair enough.
Than bullet crafting. But I'm sure we'll have, you know, we're only a couple hours in, so I'm sure we'll have a lot more impressions next week.
Marty, you went to Japan.
Konnichiwa.
Why did you go to Japan?
I got to Gozimas.
This is your big secret trip. You've been,
my secret trip.
You've been keeping this a secret for a while.
Chemisin. Dojinshi.
Stop it. I don't know what those mean. Caleb Blossom and I went to Tokyo, to Shinagawa, which is one of the wards in the city, because we got to go to the sort of grand opening of Kojima Productions, which was super insane. And like, there was only two other, it was like, I think the BBC and Famitsu were there. So that's weird.
Wow.
It's sort of a weird trio right there.
Huh.
Yeah. And then we all
the kissed. Big three.
Weird. We not all kissed. I didn't actually see any of them.
Not the BBC.
Not the BBC.
They're very proud.
Mitsu would give that kiss a 10 out of 10 out of 10 out of 10.
Yeah, but the office space is I visited a lot of Japanese office spaces, and for the insanely creative games that come out of them, they're very sort of Spartan and almost feel like a hospital with like harsh overhead lighting.
Yeah.
And it just feels like if you walk in those rooms, you're like, I don't know. Maybe they're doing finance in this room.
Right. It's. I think the culture is very minimalist. It's weird because when you play the games or you watch like anime, you see any of that, it's just like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you get to their actual office.
They're all very reserved, like, and they're wearing button-up shirts.
The walls.
Khakis. Yeah. But we know from, we've been sort of following Kojima and Mark Cerny's worldwide tour of touring all these different office spaces and what inspired him. And finally, ultimately, we got a PSX landing on the Horizon Zero Dawn engine. A sort of modified version of that for Death Stranding. But yeah, going to the actual offices, you enter and it's a very minimalist white room with a glass wall that has trophies and like the awards he's won from Death Stranding and like the trailer and the reveal.
I love that. There's already a trophy case for a game. It's not even like
two of them were IGN awards.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not even a thing yet. Yeah. I love that.
I like pointed at the other awards. I was like, just throw these away. And it just has this podium. And I was like, I don't know how we actually enter the office. If this is the office, this is a 2-person studio.
Right.
With no desks.
Right.
And they tap the ID card on the podium and a wall opens up and then it's a 75-foot, just the brightest hallway, and it's illuminated. The entire ground, both walls and ceiling, are completely illuminated in blinding light, and the only object in the room is a like 6-foot-tall Luden statue.
Oh my god.
Does it do the panel thing that he did at E3?
We're able to do the panel thing. There's like various settings on the room.
No.
And the way they described it was like they wanted this to be sort of a decontamination chamber / womb, to where you are leaving behind the sort of noise and steady life of Tokyo and cleansing yourself before you enter into the creative space where Death Stranding, assumingly, future projects are going to be developed. So that room's terrifying.
What a madman in the best way possible. Yeah. You're describing this room, and I'm thinking of like the room that Mia Jovovich goes in the Resident Evil movie.
The very first.
The lasers.
The lasers are going to kill me. And I'm not very agile.
Yep.
I did not take tumbling. Line dancing will not save me. But then you enter the actual office space, and it is very clear that he was inspired by Western developers. Like specifically, it reminded me of the office of Sony Santa Monica, of Bungie, these sort of giant, warm, open, communicative spaces. So it's one giant room with a ton of desks. I think they said ultimately they want their studio to be under 100 people. Mm-hmm. So they're very much considering themselves indie, which you're like, 100 people, that's a lot. But you're like, well, no, when you look at the credits of a game, like any Ubisoft game, it's well over 100.
I mean, look at the credits of Metal Gear Solid 5. Right?
Yeah, seriously. Like, and it's just
what are you talking about? That was written and directed and produced by Hideo Kojima.
That's it.
That says it every four
seconds.
Yeah.
And so it is one giant room. They have their own sort of an offshoot with a light mocap studio. They have their sound room. They have this giant, really open kitchen sort of meeting area where the whole thing that he said in the interview was he wants to promote communication and he doesn't want there to be middlemen. And he wasn't like calling out Konami or anything, but he was very much like, I've worked at places where communication breakdowns have caused massive delays and problems. And he's like, I want any member of the team to be able to walk up to any other member of the team and start talking. And that's what this room promotes. And there are only three quote-unquote offices, and it's him, the art director, and the producer. But the offices are completely glass-walled, connected to these things, and it seems like the door is always going to be open. And so he entered his office, and it is almost a collage of inspirations from every medium. He had this giant coffee table Kubrick book, a giant coffee table Taxi Driver book. He was listening to the La La Land soundtrack. He had Legos built in the form of one of the robo dinosaurs from Horizon.
Oh, that's so
cool.
He
had a TIE fighter on the side. So it's just
do you think that sort of that sort of office flow is kind of a big middle finger to the fact that Konami didn't let him see his own team for six months.
Honestly, yes. Like, by secluding him away, he's like, I never want this again.
Yeah. Did you ever see Konami's his studios with Konami at all? No. Okay, so I did, and I can speak to this a little bit. What was really interesting is I went to the Tokyo offices of Konami when I checked out Ground Zeroes with Mitch, rest in peace.
Not dead.
Yeah. Still, Mitch Dyer is not dead in spite of what his last name might say.
He's Canadian, so actually he might live longer than any of us.
True. Anyway, we went to Tokyo to check out Ground Zeroes, and it was a weird trip because the first part was basically like, oh, let's give you a tour of like Konami's offices. And they're very, very, like, very cold. Like, I mean, it makes sense. Basically, not a lot of like, none of the doors have windows on them, so you don't know. You could be walking into a supply closet, or you could be, you know, and it's to make sure that people aren't, you know, doing industrial espionage or just like, you know, poking around too much. Yep. But it's also kind of misleading to be like, oh, here's like a long hallway with just blank doors, and or, you know, they're written in Japanese. I don't know what the hell anything says. And then, you know, we get into the area where, you know, Kojima's kind of studio was, and it sounds kind of more akin to what, you know, what you saw. It's still cubicles and everything, but, you know, it wasn't kind of separate offices for each person working. And he had his mocap studio, and then there was this entire giant sort of research area. One thing I really loved was this was when they were first working on the Fox engine, and it wouldn't surprise me one bit if they had a similar thing there. Basically, they had a room that they kind of chose to be their, like, they rendered the room exactly one-to-one in the Fox engine to use it as kind of like a white balance or like
– they 100% have that. We've seen that with Guillermo del Toro's model. Yeah. Like the tank is in an office room with a bunch of controls and stuff on it.
Where they're like, here, let's just – we know exactly what the lighting in this room looks like. So if we can kind of create it perfectly in-game, then we have like a good kind of – that's, you know, it's a good calibration test.
I mean, I've watched like every episode of Hannibal, and if you showed me that Mads Mikkelsen model, I'm like, that's completely spot on.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing that like – that he is such an abstract and bizarre and insane director, but he's also striving for realism probably harder than almost any other game developer is right now.
Yeah. And hearing just sort of where the studio is, like they're staffing up. Like this game's a while away.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so what do you, like if you were to just throw it out there, just total shot in the dark guess.
Fall 2019.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
That
feels safe.
Yeah. But hearing him talk, he said, so this is the first year of Kojima Productions was about assembling a spacecraft and getting it into orbit. And for that, he needed people he trusted, which is why he's working alongside so many of his producers from, you know, Metal Gear, like people he's worked with for, you know, years, if not decades.
Yeah.
But he said year two is about hiring people that can take him to unexplored planets. Mm. And it's hiring internationally. It's hiring people who don't even necessarily speak Japanese. It's hiring people who don't even necessarily work in games. He's like talking about sculptors. He's talking about people from film. And he said he's hiring people that don't know who he is or who his games are.
Yeah.
But he like appreciates their work and so sits down with them and talks about the vision. And they're like, okay, yeah, I'm on board for this.
I love that I think he's obviously very clearly been influenced by film for the longest time. And that's what good filmmakers do.
Yeah.
You don't hear about that a lot in the games industry.
Yeah.
You hear about people sort of like hiring the people that they know and their friends and stuff like that. But that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So, what does it feel like there? Does it feel like they're on the precipice of like the next step? Does it feel like they're in the middle of making something? Like can you get a sort of vibe of what the level
like
is right now?
Completely, like a complete guess. It feels like there is a skeleton there and that they are now ramping up hiring to start putting flesh on it.
Right.
And the other thing I felt was just extreme optimism and extreme trust in his vision, and vice versa, him having extreme trust in the people he's bringing on, both in Tokyo as well as, you know, in the sort of Amsterdam annex at Guerrilla.
It's got to be sort of just, I mean, we've talked about this a lot, but this is just an enormously gratifying feeling for him to just get away from the baggage of years and years of having to be under – basically be signed to a record label that wouldn't let him put albums out.
Yeah. We also, like, he released a statement that we have on IGN that sort of for the first time addresses Konami. And he doesn't address it with spite, but rather he says, like, I'm grateful of everything over the course of my career, including Konami. Like, without all of these things, I would not be where I am. And this is, like, the most excited I've ever been in my career.
I think for spite, they send out Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah. I love that. He's just, like, the hype man on the side.
Yeah, it's awesome. So, check out. We have a full video feature sort of chronicling a bunch of footage. backstage interviews with Kojima and other members of the team.
And you guys got to connect on La La Land.
Yeah, which was awesome.
Great.
Yeah, which is amazing. That was my favorite movie of the year. It's been, if you follow him on Twitter, he's obviously quite obsessed with the movie.
I think that's what I love about Kojima, following him on Twitter, is that when he locks in on something, like, he doesn't let go. When you can tell when he likes something, he's one of those guys that, like I had a friend in high school that was a big Resident Evil fan, and he bought every copy of the game in every region.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's nuts. Why would you do that? And he's like, I'm a collector. Like, I just love it. Like, they all have different art. They have different packaging. They have different, like, idiosyncrasies. And, you can just see, following him on Twitter, he's like, I love La La Land. I'm going to buy everything La La Land. Posters, books, DVDs.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. He was the same way when Fury Road came out. He said he saw it every day it was in theaters.
I think he said
that seems a little spookous.
He just tweeted the other day about how he saw the black and chrome edition, which is the Mad Max Fury Road, where you just it's just all in black and white. And he was like, I think this is my 27th time seeing this. And then he tweeted a picture of him eating lunch in black and white, and he was like, Hideo Kojima, black and chrome edition. And then he tweeted a picture, not to just read his tweets without actually reading them, but he tweeted a picture of his coffee cup, and he's like, this coffee, like, the mug was black or was white, and the coffee was black, and he's like, this is black and white, but you can taste the colors. And it's like, all right. Okay.
Yeah.
You got some. Right. You got a medical marijuana.
Yeah.
Your game is called Jazz Cigarettes. Yeah.
No, I'm excited. I'm excited
he's great.
See him make something weird.
Yeah.
I mean, weirder than he's already made, because it's like, this is, we don't know what the hell this game is about.
Yeah.
It could be about anything. It could make no sense on purpose.
Yeah, I think that, like, that's the really interesting thing about this. If we look at his last two projects, it's PT, which is incredibly tight and personal, and it's about this hallway, and Metal Gear Solid 5, which is massive and spans multiple continents. And,
But it's also a follow-up to, you know, a 25-year-old series, a 30-year-old series.
So I wonder which direction this will go, you know? Like,
I'm really curious if we're – because we know he's has the keynote at RTX.
Yep.
In RTX Sydney, which Greg's going to be moderating. That's, I think, next week.
Oh, yeah,
super
that's
exciting.
Right.
So we're going to get more, you know, out of there. So I'm really curious if at any point in this development they're going to sort of go dark, or if they're going to, you know, in something that is not very Japanese in terms of development, sort of keep the door open and keep a two-way line of communication.
Well, I mean,
yeah, I'm interested in that.
Yeah,
it's Japanese games absolutely put out tons and tons of information, to the point that I think that if you compare something like, I don't know, Final Fantasy 15 with, you know, GTA 5, like, the amount of information drops, like, we had a decade plus worth of bits and pieces of Final Fantasy 15, to the point that you're like, where was that? Where was this? And I mean, I beat Metal Gear Solid 5 as much as you can beat that game. And there is one major thing, like, there was stuff in the trailers leading up to that game that was pretty much showing the end of the game, like, showing stuff from the final cutscenes, or, you know, as far as they got. And there's, like, one thing in there that was right kind of in front of us the whole time that was modified in the trailers. Like, there was a thing that was switched around. So, like, and, you know, PT is very much like this too. And we saw this with, like, the fact that the Phantom Pain was originally, like, this mystery game made by, like, a Swedish mummy.
Yeah.
Who, like, you know, hung out with Jeff Keighley. But I like the idea that he understands that in this day and age, the narrative isn't just what's in the package. It's everything leading up to it.
Yeah, the conversation leading up to it.
So, I mean, if everything we've seen so far of Death Stranding isn't actually in the game, that's fine.
And I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah.
None of this relates to what it
is. All we know is we play as Norman Reedus in what I assume is a third-person game. The end.
Yeah, we don't know anything.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I mean,
all I know is that vague thing. Maybe.
You might play as the baby.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of things from Japan that are confusing for some of us, Kingdom Hearts.
Drop that title.
Hello, Kingdom Hearts HD 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue. Is out.
How do you have?
You think you're gonna say prolapse?
It's amazing.
Final chapter. Okay, what?
So it's comprised of three things that all have different titles.
Are you drinking out of a Kingdom Hearts mug?
I am drinking out of a Kingdom Hearts mug. Dr. Pepper. God. That heavy Dr. Pepper.
Okay.
I don't know which is
Dr. Pepper HD 2.5 nights and 42 moons.
Diet.
Okay. So what's going on with Kingdom Hearts?
So Kingdom Hearts 2.8, the easy way to refer to it, is basically, like its title suggests, is the lead up to 3. It gets you the furthest point in the series back in time, as well as the most recent thing that you need to know.
So and in theory, this is the last thing before.
In theory. There's also a collection coming out in March, sort of to celebrate the anniversary of the franchise.
Oh, good. That won't confuse people.
No, not it's called Kingdom Hearts 1.5 plus 2.5. So
that's 4.
So they know they know what they're doing.
Yes, they know. They have to know.
They know that they're messing with people like
yes.
me.
Yes. Well, okay. Before 2.8 came out, there were all these rumors that it was going to be called 2.9.
So my
theory is there's still a 2.9.
I love that we have this going on at the same time as the Final Fantasy franchise, which yes. start every time you turn that game on 15, it was like a game for beginners and old friends and all that stuff. And this one's just like, hey, are you new? Go away.
Yeah. No, 2.8 is not for a newcomer to the franchise. Like, you should not play 2.8 if you've never played. Yeah, like, you should play the collection coming out in March.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was going to be my next question, because I've never, like...
Which comes out after the prequel.
Yes. Yeah.
But this is also the sequel.
So, do you play the one in March and then play this?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Have you played all these?
I've played every single Kingdom Hearts game multiple times, every time it comes out. I've spent too much time on this.
So how does this one
I guess like break down the three things.
So the three things, one of them is sort of a 60-70 minute film called Back Cover, which is basically the furthest point back in the series. It tells you kind of how Keyblades came to be and this huge war that's been alluded to throughout the series.
Last time I was in a hotel room, I bought a film called Back Cover.
Mm-hmm. Probably a different film.
Yeah.
Just going to throw that out there. The second piece is a remake of a 3DS game called Dream Drop Distance.
Dream Drop Distance.
Yes.
I remember that one because I'm bad at saying it, and in my job sometimes I have to say things into a camera, and I've definitely had to stop doing my job to say that name right again. Dream Drop Distance.
Yes. There you go.
There we go. I did it.
Which is... was the furthest point in the timeline up until 3.
And that was the most recent. That was a 3DS game.
Originally a 3DS game.
That was like 2012 or so?
2012, yeah. That was the 10th anniversary.
That's one of the games that used the Franken stick because the game played better with dual
with the extra circle pad.
What, Kingdom Hearts 2 came out, 2006?
Six. Yeah, okay. The original came out in 2 and then 2 came out in 6, yeah.
It comes out in upside down question marks.
I love how...
none of these numbers make
this
sense.
Confusing ass timeline somehow centers around Goofy and Winnie the Pooh.
it's kind of amazing. It's so wonderfully perverse because when I think of the most entry level casual, you know, intellectual properties, I think Disney.
Yes. Yeah.
Like short of like Play-Doh, like I don't know of, and that's not even characters. That's like a
Play-Doh or just Play-Doh.
Play-Doh?
Not Play-Doh. Play-Doh. Like the pink stuff that if you eat it, it's not going to kill you. Like it just tastes bad.
Toxic spaghetti.
Yeah, like Disney is like, I'm like, I once enjoyed a fine game called Mickey Mania where Mickey Mouse jumped on things and threw marbles. And then they're like, guess what? You have to play a game with decimal points in the title.
Yes. So for,
for hardcore Kingdom Hearts fans, which you obviously are one, is this something you absolutely should play?
So the third thing.
So that's the third part is something you should play. I would recommend waiting until it's a little cheaper because it is really only a 3 hour or so experience. Mm-hmm. But Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep 0.2, A Fragmentary Passage. That is the full title. You should probably just, it's going to be a while. That was only the first part of the title notes.
No.
That continues from the PSP prequel game released in, I believe, the late 2000s called Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep. It follows one of the characters.
A normal, regular title for a video game.
For a Kingdom Hearts game. That is you basically find out what happened to this character after that game ended leading up to 3. And it is built
it's
in the Kingdom
Aqua,
Hearts.
Like the water.
Good, I know that word.
It's built with the Kingdom Hearts 3 technology, so this is kind of our first actual glimpse of Kingdom Hearts 3 that you can play.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's great. It's really fun.
So how much did you read up on Kingdom Hearts? Is this the thing you have it in your brain?
No, this is just in the back of my head all the time.
So like if you let's say there are people who are like lapsed Kingdom Hearts fans and maybe they skip Dream Drop Distance. Triple D.
Back Cover.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah, so how does it for somebody who maybe is just trying to get themselves like back into gear for Kingdom Hearts 3? Like,
I think if you hadn't played Birth by Sleep, that part would still be confusing because knowing who Aqua is does matter.
Yeah.
The really essential games are Kingdom Hearts 1, 2, and Birth by Sleep. I think you can get by without really playing many of the others. There are bits and pieces you should know, but you can get by. Mm-hmm. This piece about Aqua in 2.8 is really great at sort of connecting the dots of those games and bringing you to, and it surprisingly brings you up to 3. Like, I don't want to spoil the ending, but I was surprised at how much it gets you to where 3 is going.
Yeah.
I just said I suddenly understand what it's like to be a not a Metal Gear Solid fan and to hear somebody yeah. explain like, so anyway, the Sniper Wolf, if you get the Psycho Mantis and the Fear, you're like, what?
I don't have like a lot of blind spots when it comes to the games industry. I've just been doing this for a long time and playing games on every platform for a long time. This is one of the ones where I'm just like, every time I'm like, let me like crack this nut a little bit.
Well, and as a fan, I get that. Like, Back cover. There are only three or so essential ones that you need to play for the story, but it why I grabbed onto the franchise was because it hit me at this great time where, because it's Final Fantasy and Disney, it was kind of like I was right at that puberty moment.
Of course, yeah.
I'm growing up and hitting, oh, there's emo, but also Disney that I love. Yeah. So it really blended for me, and so I stuck to the story. But the story gets crazy convoluted and complex, and there are so many things you need to understand to get 2.8. Which is why I think the collection coming out in March will be for newcomers. That's what you want to play to get excited for.
Okay.
For
yeah.
Okay. So if you get into the one in March lot, then there's all of this stuff to go back and dig
Yes. Yeah. And really, I think that Aqua chapter that's built on the 3 engine is really the only essential of those three, because the other two you still don't really need.
Yeah.
But this one it's fun also.
Yeah. I'm really excited to play that and sort of get a taste, because I considered myself a big Kingdom Hearts fan until Jonathan came.
And
here.
I walked in
the
right. Doesn't that suck when you're like, I know a lot about this thing, and then someone's like, yeah, did you?
Well, that was I was growing up, I was the biggest Star Wars fan I knew, and then I came here.
Yeah.
I'm the 40th biggest Star Wars fan in that room.
I'm 41st.
Congrats. But yeah, I'm excited to see sort of the combat tweaks and enemy encounter design and just sort of how your character feels sort of prepare myself for 3.
It harkens back to the bigger worlds that were in 1 and 2. You're fighting a lot more enemies at once, and they're more creative enemies. The worlds have more branching pathways to explore and get.
Which is what we've sort of gotten a taste of in the brief glimpses we've gotten of 3.
Yes, yeah.
I'm stoked.
Yeah.
All right. Winnie the Pooh is back.
With a vengeance.
I don't even know if he's in those things.
What a weird footnote to that.
He's always in those things.
So Yakuza 0 comes out today.
Yeah.
Has anyone, any guys touched it at
all?
Yeah,
put a couple hours into it.
What's it, is it cool?
Yes, it's awesome.
I got a code for this and I'm really excited.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a prequel. It takes place, in 1988 in pretty much Kabukicho, which was in Shibuya, the red light district. Such a good job of capturing the sort of madness, energy, grime, filth, and pleasure of what you would imagine a red light district in Tokyo in the late 80s would be.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so it starts the two main characters of the series, and this is your prequel introduction to them. But the thing I love most is, like, yes, it's GTA-ish. It's not like an expansive world, but it's a really deep world. In terms of, like, there's just a lot of, texture to each area. And, the main story is fine. The combat's cool. It's Arkham-y. But the thing I love most is just the insane amount of things you can do that if you have to do A and B, there's a C, D, E, F, G. Like, you can go to a maid cafe. You can go play Outrun and Space Harrier.
Karaoke?
You can go karaoke. You can go to, you can go to a thrift store.
Does karaoke just switch over to, like, a rhythm game?
It just keeps doing different things, which is insane. You can get late night ramen. You can just roam the streets. It's so cool.
Okay, I'm really excited.
Yeah, Max, I think you're going to love
that. Yeah, I've always loved kind of, like, you know, the GTA open world crime games and stuff. And Yakuza's always been one of those ones I've kind of, like, my exposure to the series has been like GIFs on Tumblr or like weird screen caps. Somebody who was reviewing it was like, here's my experience with Yakuza 0 in 4 screenshots. And they were like 4 of the most incoherent, confusing screenshots. And
it was like you talking to a rooster and you're
you're talking to me about Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah. But it was like, what am I seeing? And I think I've seen like clips where somebody like, you know, bursts into a room and like drop kicks a schoolgirl out a window. And you're like, what? Like, I'm sure there's a context, but even in the context, I think it's kind of, you know, known for being sort of over the top.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm excited because this is of course a prequel. And the one that's basically a remake of the first one comes out later this year.
Yeah.
They announced that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. But also 80s. Like, hell yeah.
It's a little, visually, it's a little unimpressive just because this was originally a PS3 game.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like an HD version of a PS3 game. This is a PS4 game, but just keep in mind, like, some of those early PS4 games that had versions on both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, really cool. Honestly, I don't know if I'm going to finish this, but I just love spending like an hour in this world.
It's doing a kind of interesting like depth of field blur to sort of mask the fact that the draw distance isn't what you would probably expect, but it kind of works in its favor. It's a weird
pollution.
Effect.
Yeah.
Or it looks like when you're in LA and it's just kind of like hot enough where there's this weird haze.
Yeah.
Also, this game does not have autosave, so make sure you save.
Ooh, man, good catch. That is a very good point.
Good to know. PS4A.
Ooh.
Oh. Yeah, so I'm excited to jump into that. And yeah, I think I just, if you give me a choice, like, hey, you can go to 1980s Tokyo and eat ramen late at night, or you can go in a messed up Louisiana mansion and get chased by black mold in VR, I think I'm going to do the former. So have fun with Resident Evil, boys.
I feel like no matter what the second choice was, you would have done the former.
Yeah, pretty much.
You're babby.
And I'll what see do you mean a babby? I want to go to maid cafes.
I'll see you guys on the gummy ship. Kingdom Hearts reference. Thank you.
Shut up. Okay, For Honor is coming out in the sometime nearish future?
Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Ah.
3 weeks away. Yeah. And I believe the beta is Thursday or alpha beta.
Yeah, they've had a couple that have been running for the last like month or so. So a lot of people have been getting their hands on it.
And I want to make a quick, not even an apology, because why would I do that? I'm an asshole. When I first heard about this game, when I first saw this game, I was not interested in it at all. It's one of those things where I was like, I don't really care about like Vikings and knights and samurai. It just seemed like the kind of game for people who hang swords over their beds. Like, I'm like, that's fun for you guys. You guys enjoy it. I wasn't into it at all. I know, I'm just pissing off everybody today. I'm sorry, guys. Just let's sound
What's
off
wrong with comment. Swords above your beds? What are you supposed to do if
they could fall and hit you right in the nuts?
What if a wyvern comes in the night? How are you supposed to defend yourself?
Throw your Funko Pops at it. I was not interested in this game at all, and I played it for a couple hours today, and I had a really good time. It is a very, very, very difficult game. I want to put this in there right off the bat. This is a hardcore gamer's game. This is not a kind of game where you can just go in and mash buttons.
It's not Dynasty Warriors.
No.
Screenshots can look like Dynasty Warriors.
Yes, yeah. I think that's what we all thought when we first saw it, because it's you're this guy, and he's fighting waves of enemies at times. And to me, it feels like taking the best parts of Rise, the best parts of Dynasty Warriors, and the best parts in Infinity Blade, and crossing them with the sort of hardcore combo aspect of Street Fighter.
Yes, totally.
And so, like, I went from being like, I don't care about this at all, to playing it, to being like, this is really frustrating, to being like, I'm really good at this, this is awesome, to repeatedly getting my ass kicked, to being like, I hate this more than anything in the world, I'll never play it again, to winning and being like, that was incredible. Like the loop of like losing to winning in victory in that game is one of the most satisfying wins. Like just actually winning a fight, like holding on to your controller and gripping it and killing someone with a sword is immensely satisfying in this
and
game.
It is able to handle that sort of moment in a big battle in like any medieval movie or like Game of Thrones, where like you feel like Jon Snow mowing down waves of people that don't matter. And that's when it feels like Dynasty Warriors. But then you get to that point where he sees, what was his name, Ramsay, whoever killed a bunch of his family members. And then you get to that moment where it turns into a fighting game, like a one-on-one, very personal, very strategic thing.
Which I think it does. Shadows of Mordor did it like...
I thought you were going to say shout out to Mordor.
Shout out to Mordor.
My new album. Shout out to Mordor.
They did it in a much sort of more lighthearted way, where you'd be fighting a bunch of guys, and all of a sudden the guy would be like, "Whoa, you golly, bolly, bitty, Bob!" And then you'd have to fight him one on one while everyone else was like throwing bees at you and stuff. This game that doesn't have a man that
like
yells at you.
That game had far fewer bees than you bring.
No, there were a lot of bees.
No, I started replaying it on PS4 Pro.
A lot of bees. Of bees. You can actually see more
PS4
of the bees.
PS4 Pro adds bees. Yeah. That's the problem.
Yep. Yeah. That's what you pay for. That's
yeah.
That's
BLC.
The power in the box. That's actually on the front. Forget it.
The bee movie.
So, yeah, I totally came around on this game. Yep. And I don't know if I'll stick with it like for months and months, but it's the kind of thing where like I think I played with a couple of people from work doing 2-on-1 matches, doing 3 against like another army of people. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I really liked, which I don't think I've seen a ton of, is the environmental kills are really awesome. Yeah. Like I learned this push mechanic, which you can basically like grab a guy and throw him or just hold on to him and try to kill him. And there's certain areas where there's like, there's a puddle on the ground and it turns into a geyser and you push a guy into it and it's like an instant kill and he just bursts into flames. What? Or there's like spikes on a wall and you're in the middle of a fight and you just throw a guy at it and he just gets impaled immediately. And you're like, this is awesome.
That sounds really cool. It's one of those geyser. Like, environmental kills will immediately get me more excited about something that's melee based that I might not initially care about. Yep. Like that's what one thing that I loved about Sleeping Dogs, something I loved about Injustice, like the fact that suddenly you're not just like, it's not just this kind of odd, like, freestyle rhythm thing against another, you know,
avatar or whatever, it's suddenly you're in this environment and it actually makes a difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think we know much about if they're like, I kind of checked out on this game. If, like, is there a single player? Like,
yeah, there's a single player. Yeah. There's a story. It has a villainous who's like a sorceress.
Cause I'm really interested in that because I love the mechanics of this game, but I want to play it on easy because I need it to be a little more forgiving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They mm-hmm. sort of taught me, the tutorials teach you the rules of this game and then you get into your first match and you start forgetting them because mm-hmm. it's just so intense. Yeah. That you're like, I forget how to block. I forget how to do this.
And one thing that's really cool about it is it's different than pretty much anything that's out on the market.
Yeah,
especially in terms of Ubisoft, because when we play Ubisoft games, we're like, oh, we expect the Far Cry AC Watchdog sort of gameplay loop.
Where can I climb up on tower?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say there's another game that's coming out that sounds kind of similar, which is Absolver.
Yeah.
Which is another game where it's basically like, hey, so everyone knows what a fighting game is. Like, that's mm-hmm. one of those just, you know, meat and potatoes, basic ass video game genres. But what if you put it inside a larger universe? You know, what if you took these mechanics and made them, you know, part of something bigger? And that's a game where you're going around and fighting enemies and you make allies and stuff. And I'm really curious to see how these kind of grow communities around them, because we're at a point where, you know, games like the Souls series has taken something very simple, like, oh, you take a sword and you fight a goblin or whatever, and made it into this very like technical and, you know, nuanced and something that requires a lot of you know, finesse to make it work.
They're fallen knights.
Okay, that's fine.
Fast fallen
knights. So we are doing a big video series soon. I'm hosting it and I'm guesting with Alana Pierce and James Duggan here at IGN. And we're all picking a class and we're going...
Lonzo and the Duggler!
Yes, that's exactly what no one has ever called
us. Big old Bizzle in the...
We're teaming up with a bunch of different...
Those are the stars of
Saved by the Bell.
Let me get through this. We're teaming up with a bunch of different people from all over the games industry and YouTube, people like Harley Morenstein and Kinda Funny and The Completionist, and we're picking different classes. So there's samurais, knights, and Vikings, so I'm mm-hmm. not sure exactly how that's getting divvied up, but I am a Viking. I don't know why. Kind of like samurais more, but I had to play as a Viking.
We had to talk about this.
The reason you're not a samurai is because you said samurais.
Well, boo.
Jedis.
Jedi is plural.
The last Jedis.
The last samurais.
Samurais.
Cruises.
Samurais is actually what it's called when you sum up what happens in a Kurosawa movie.
So look for that video series soon. I think it's going to be a big live stream. I think we're starting it on Thursday. So look out for that.
Great. I want to talk a little bit about games that are coming out these days. They keep making them.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a weird drop in PSN game quality.
Yeah.
There have been notably there's a game that popped up called Life of Black Tiger.
Okay, so Google right now, pause.
Yes.
Google
whatever
trailer,
you're doing. Yeah.
Leave Life the tab open.
Of Black Tiger.
Yeah.
Yes.
Watch this trailer.
Yeah.
Now you're back.
Yeah.
And presumably you watch that on the official PlayStation channel. Like, this is a thing that Sony's being like, this looks fine, and putting it out there. And like, I think my old colleague Jim Sterling, who frequently just says the thing that everyone's thinking and, you know, gets in trouble because of it, he went on record and was like, I think this is the worst console game I've ever played. And you know, he plays a lot of like Steam shovelware.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just kind of
legitimately looks like a PlayStation 1 game, maybe a launch PS2.
It looks like a very bad Android game.
Well, that's exactly what's happening, Max. I think people are dragging and dropping terrible iPhone games on the consoles instead of the other way around. And we saw like for a long time, we were like, what happened to like the middle shelf or the bottom shelf in gaming? We saw these third parties go away in the last generation. Most of them moved to mobile. I think a lot of them are getting a little frisky and they're trying to come back to consoles with their trash they're making
on
mobile.
I don't know what's happening there, because like presumably the whole thing that like one of the wonderful sort of double-edged sword upside downsides is that you don't get as many weird kind of like, you know, bottom shelf things that you might get on PC with PSN,
right?
And you have to pay for online and it's, you know, not as powerful, but you know, there's a kind of a you know, quality filter there.
Yeah,
you know,
it's one of those. I don't remember things like this existing downloadable on PS3.
No.
Like when I look back at like my cross-media bar on my PS3 and see all the cool downloadable games I have from that game company and Pixel Jump games and Bionic.
Well, I think this is a sort of like an example of what happens when you make it easier to work with indies, right?
Sure.
You make it easier to work with companies, small studios who have an idea for a game. And I think it's awesome that like opening those doors lets so many things in, but it's also you get stuff like this.
There needs to be someone who looks at this trailer and is like, no. And then there's this other game, Skylight, Free Range
this
2.
One.
Ooh, I was going to say, if the Life of Black Tiger trailer made you sad and you need a good hearty har laugh, watch the trailer for Skylight Free Range 2, Gatchduin.
Gatchduin.
not stop laughing at this.
This looks like if PlayStation Home was developed by students.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
It, it looks like a bunch of just kind of very homemade polygon characters kind of floating around. And
if Second Life looks bad, this looks like First Life.
Yes.
This is like what they tried to do first.
It honestly looks like somebody lost a bet and made a game a 10-year-old pitched.
Yeah. I don't know what Skylight Free Range 1 is, but Skylight Free Range Gachdwin is rated M for mature and apparently has nudity and sexual content, but with these god-awful, like, Fisher-Price My Little People avatars running around.
Yeah. I don't know, like, the word Gachdwin. Like, Gachdwin? It makes me say noises.
Yeah. I don't know
how
if
does
this was...
not have Kingdom Hearts anywhere in the title?
That's actually a prequel.
But yeah, like, it's... I think it's great that it's more accessible for, you know, for smaller game publishing companies to make games. But at the same time, like, it also sucks that a game like this is being charged $15 and, you know, somebody jumps on the store and they're like, oh, I spent money on this.
So that's the thing that's really important to point out.
Right.
Like, a lot of these games aren't, like, cheap. They're not really free to play. Like,
no.
We'll talk about the next one. But, I mean, some of these games go from $15 to $20 to $30. They're not even like functional sometimes.
Right.
Yeah. Not like they're not finished or unpolished. They're like fundamentally broken video games.
Yeah. We played one called Joe's Diner.
Oh my God.
I think we'll probably have a let's play up on IGN today. Basically, Joe's Diner, it looks fine. I think it's running in Unity.
Yeah.
Visually, it's theoretically pretty good.
Yes.
It's basically a Five Nights at Freddy's ripoff, except instead of being a like a defunct bootleg Chuck E. Cheese, it is a diner somewhere in the Midwest of America, presumably. Mm-hmm. And you've been hired as a vacation like temp, like somebody went on vacation. You've been hired to take over the graveyard shift at this diner. What they don't tell you until you load the game up and there's an unskippable cutscene that explains all this to you is that Joe's Diner was built on Native American burial grounds.
Ooh.
Now, this is already kind of one of those things like, okay, this has A, been done to death, and B, kind of hard to do in 2017 without being horribly culturally insensitive. The good news is this was developed by Germans who probably maybe didn't do a ton of research into A, Native Americans, or B, Midwestern American diners.
Yeah. They watched Poltergeist.
Or even just the food service industry in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically you're in this diner and you have to walk around, and the entire game that we could glean from playing it a few rounds, is you have to walk around and clean up the diner. Like, you have to take food off the table and put it in the trash. Weird part is, it's all like, I think it's all like Unity Store assets of food. So it's an entire cheeseburger or a full Slurpee, which they don't serve in 50s diners. I don't know why that's there. And take it and put it in the trash. But every time you do anything, it makes noise. And there are various devices scattered around the diner that turn on, like a phone will start ringing or the jukebox will start playing. And it's, you know, conceivably sort of spooky. You've got this meter, and as it gets louder, the louder it gets, the more likely the old ghost chief will come out and get you.
I don't want that.
So you could think that maybe this would be an interesting thing where, like, oh no, if it gets too loud, the ghost is going to come and you have to hide from
it. Like,
and
don't wake daddy, the old boy.
Yeah, and this is all like first person. And it, like, again, graphically looks okay. You've got a flashlight, which they don't even tell you can turn on. When the ghost comes out, it is a clip art image of a Native American chief that flashes on the screen and it says, like, you're dead or something.
It's like the thing that Lucky Kids found on Tootsie Pops.
Yeah. Like, if you die 10 times, you get a free bag of Tootsie Rolls.
Yeah.
But no, like, it works, but it's so bad.
And it's $20.
Again,
it's third of the price of Resident Evil 7.
Yeah, and maybe we screwed up and there's some deeper narrative here or some incredible
frog
game buried away.
Yeah.
Maybe, but I don't really think so.
It's just racist frog crashes.
Yeah. Also, really weird part is there are like 99 slots for save files. This isn't really a game that you need to save a whole lot.
99 times.
I don't think you even can save like mid-round. It's kind of
also
odd.
Also, if you're that good at saving, don't spend $20 on this game.
Yeah. Those are some bad games that are out there. You probably would rather watch people play them. I mean, it's kind of weird because there's a whole industry for that, people playing shovelware. If you want to check out a good game that's affordable, check out Hunter's Legacy. It's on PSN. It came out today. It is a little 2D Metroidvania where you play as a tiger lady. It's $7.
You could buy it three times for the price of Joe's Diner.
Yeah. Exactly. I was screwing around with it. It's fun. It has a wonderful kind of hand-drawn art style.
Yeah,
it looks
really
a little
cool.
It reminds me a lot of like Klasky Shupo, so like Rugrats, Duckman, Wild Thornberries.
Sure, what? Yeah, I thought that was a slur.
Klasky Shupo?
Who would stop that?
You didn't grow up on Nickelodeon, did you?
I did. I didn't realize who Klasky Shupo is.
It was Arlene Klasky Gabor Shupo.
Keith.
They did the cover. They did a cover of Frank Zappa's The Lost Episodes. Anyway, it's a wonderful little kind of hand drawn thing, and it's $7. So if you want to, if you want something that'll be a nice aperitif for when you're scared pantsless by the Resident Evil guys, you can play this cute cartoon cat game.
Keep your pants on.
Yeah, keep those pants on. Anyway, yeah. There's also it can be tempting to see something that's on sale on PSN, but maybe just check it out first, because that's there's our little PSN PSA for you. Don't buy the Tiger game. Buy the Hunter's one, not the Black Tiger one, because that's a phone game.
Great PSA.
Anyway, words is great. Tommy, to make them come out of your mouth, they're a whole bunch of sentences. Anyway, speaking of sentences, here's one for you. It's time for Rapid Fire. Rapid Fire is, of course, the part of the show where we answer your weird questions from our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/podcastbeyond.
Groups.com.
See you in the cloud. Anyway,
We gotta do quicks.
Yeah. Matt T. Garso says, which games in 2017 would best be suited for, or would you like to see have VR levels / experiences attached? And Paul Mastroianni said, what other big franchises do you think would benefit from VR modes? Both kind of the same question, but it's a good question nonetheless.
I would love to see Horizon have some sort of like dino tourism mode, because really I think one of the coolest things that I've seen in VR so far was first the AT-AT in the Battlefront VR thing, when that walks by, that sense of scale, looking up at that weird elephant's tongue. And then number two is Robinson the Journey. The dinosaurs in that game look awesome. Mm-hmm. So combine both of those beasts, and you have robot dinosaurs, and they would look really cool. So I don't know about like sort of like hunting them or anything like that, but at least sort of just like hanging out somewhere and checking it out would be really cool.
Yeah.
Spider-Man.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. Batman Arkham VR is one of my favorite VR experiences that I've had so far, and the idea of it making you feel like that hero, I think Spider-Man is probably one of the ones that makes the most sense for that.
Yeah.
And there have even been games that are similar to a Spider-Man game.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll plug this game real quick if you're looking for a Spider-Man-ish experience on PSVR. It's called Windlands, and it gave me legitimate fear of heights, but it's about shooting ropes and climbing up to like really high areas and trees and collecting stuff,
shooting and ropes swinging and doing ropes.
Yeah, it's about swinging and shooting ropes.
A second.
What about you, Marty?
I think it'd be cool for, I mean, we're assuming Battlefront 2 is coming this fall. I think a more sort of robust VR component than the sort of X-Wing VR that we had in...
I told you what I want for that, right? I want, so you could unlock those...
Toys?
Yeah, those toys, those like models that you can unlock.
Yeah.
I want those, but like action figures and blister packs that you can pick up and turn around and open up and stuff like that.
Yeah. I like, there's this game Lucky's Tale 4 Oculus. That's it's a 3D platformer, but you sort of are the camera. And I think that'd be really cool for like the Crash Collection that's coming out.
Oh,
sort of
like
you looking at those lanes and be able to sort of change your perspective and get up there. And
that would make it a lot easier. Grundle. I remember doing interviews before with the Lucky's Tale devs at E3 when they were like, "Hey, we're making a platformer for Oculus," and I was like, "But why? Isn't Oculus for scary things and first person?" And they were like, "Well, actually, it's a lot easier to platform if you're, you know, we've all had that thing with a bad camera in the 3D platformer, but when it becomes almost second nature, where you can when your depth perception is no longer an issue." So that'd be kind of cool if that became sort of tacked on. I'm dying for the first game that just implements something where, whether it's like, you know, whether it's Horizon Zero Dawn or, you know, Ghost Recon Wildlands, something where they're just like, hey, you want to look around in VR? This beautiful world we've rendered? Mm-hmm. Like, if it's maybe sending up a drone and suddenly the drone is like kind of, you know, stuck in one spot, but they're like switching to VR and you're like, whoa, I can see all around.
There's
here.
Like a programmer technology for, again, PC for Oculus called Ansel.
Yeah, we talked about that.
And you can like take a screen, you can like pause Witcher 3 and sort of just exist in the space and look around. And it's not a game per se.
Yeah. There's a thing they just launched. I hope I'm not screwing up the name. It's on PSVR and it's like $10 and it's called, I think it's called Paradise. Did you see this in the store?
No, not yet.
And it's basically just like a, like vacation viewer. Where you can basically be like, I'm going to sit at the top of a mountain and just hang out. I can look around. I can pick different viewpoints and just kind of like be zen.
Yeah.
Or I can
go
by this beach. I can go by this ocean. Yeah. I want to see more stuff like that, but with recognizable game environments. That's a good idea.
Yeah, it seems almost kind of just like a waste to create these, you know, beautiful, massive worlds and just to not be like, hey, let's, I mean, I don't know how much work goes into it. I imagine probably a stupid amount, but to just be like, hey, there's a, you know, extra bonus VR feature where you can look around this world, right?
Yeah, and just explore. Like, one of the best VR experiences I've had was Google Earth or whatever on just a mobile VR, and you just, I click to the top of a mountain, and I'm seeing out from the top, and it's amazing.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's crazy.
You see that in so actual cool. game worlds.
Yeah. I hope that comes from VR.
Yes. Yeah.
So, on that note, Steve Green said, with Sony closing studios that worked on VR and not restocking stores, are they trying to kill off PSVR already? I'm loving RE7 in VR, and I hate that Sony doesn't seem to be pushing this experience at all.
No, I don't think they're, I mean, they've committed too much to PSVR to pull the cord on it. And also with RE7 being sort of the first tentpole AAA established franchise game and having it actually be super successful in VR, which I thought it would be nauseating in VR, but everyone who's played it loves it in VR. Yeah, Chloe preferred it in VR.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. I mean, the comfort options are incredible. Yeah. I will say that PSVR is sort of felt a little muted at PSX.
Yeah.
There were a few games here and there that we talked about back when we did that show, but all in all, I think they're in this weird pattern between, like, we don't want to overpromise and we don't want to underdeliver, and we are sort of just like waiting to see how the market responds. But the problem is the market doesn't know what it wants until you tell them. Mm-hmm. And I think they need to get just a little bit louder on the bullhorn to sort of explain to people, like, this thing is awesome, because it legitimately is. It's the most comfortable consumer-ready VR I've ever tried.
Yeah.
It's just awesome. I mean, I got one. Max, you just got one. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a great toy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it works so well with your PlayStation. It doesn't work well with your PS4 Pro, which is a different story entirely, even though it makes things look better. Quick tangent, I'm really annoyed by the fact that those things don't communicate better. That I have to when I play a game with HDR, like Resident Evil 7, I have to unplug it. But when I want to try the VR mode, I plug it all back in. Mm. Like, there isn't a smarter way. That's stupid breakout.
I think that's a thing in whatever the Gen 2 version of PSVR is going to fix that, which sucks for someone who got it at launch or close to launch.
Yeah, I mean, I bought all of those toys and a new TV all within the span of like 2 or 3 months, and they don't communicate the way they should, and everything else does.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cumbersome. But that being said, I'm hearing that PSVRs are available in stores a little bit more now. They're starting to show up on shelves again. They were impossible to get for a long time. Yeah. So if you want one, buy it. Go listen to our old episodes about how much we love them. I'll probably put together something soon. Maybe next week, Max, we can do a little thing about our VR.
We'll do some homework.
Give you guys a little crash course.
Yeah. Phil Mansfield says, will the survival horror genre ever get stale old?
Nope.
No.
I think it'll be fine. In the same way the horror film genre never gets stale.
Yeah.
I mean, with all genres in general, they come in waves.
Yeah, totally.
Things will get stale for a bit, and then someone will reinvent it in an interesting way, and that revitalizes everything.
Yeah, you'll have smaller indie things introduce new ideas and concepts that AAA games end up taking from and building on.
I just watched this movie, The Girl with All the Gifts, which I'm not fatigued on zombie stuff, but I'm at the point where it doesn't surprise me anymore. And I saw this movie, and it did what I think 28 Days Later did 10, 12 years ago, whenever that was, right?
Yeah.
So, I think there's always room for it. If you look at just the last few years, the survival horror genre has changed immensely, become like a lot more sort of quiet and sort of less combative and more sort of sitting in the shadows and waiting.
Yeah.
Experiential, first person stuff. I mean, the fact that we've seen Resident Evil reinvent themselves so many times shows that I think there's always going to be room to breathe there.
Speaking of Resident Evil reinventing itself, you should check out the Secret Origins of Resident Evil, which Zach Ryan, among many others, put together. It's this really great sort of crash course on the roots of the series, where it came from and how it got here.
Yeah.
Really good.
Mm-hmm. I had that question in there because I wanted to piggyback on it. Cody Becker said, what would an Oregon Trail game that was rebooted look like today for you? I think that would be a really cool survival horror game.
Yeah.
I would love to see survival horror leaning more into the actual existing horror. Like, be like, oh, hey, you're trying to flee a war-torn country or something. Like a game where it's taking – I mean, we've seen all kinds of messed up stuff in video games at this point. But to see something that's like – I mean, imagine like The Revenant, but – you know, a video game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you think about, I remember like playing Oregon Trail when I was a little kid in school, which was very odd because like you would sit down in front of like an old computer that was like, it was like an old Macintosh and it was black and green. And it would be like, your wife's dead.
Here's her tombstone.
And then,
isn't
like,
that great?
And you like, if you hunted too much in one area, no animals showed up anymore. And you're like, there's something oddly dark and alarming about this game. But I think having that, like, you know, running in the same engine that Death Stranding's running, and all of a sudden you go to caulk the wagon across the river, and your children die. Like, that would be hard to cope with.
Yeah,
an actual brutal survival game.
Yeah.
I mean,
when you get mauled by a bear.
Yeah. Conversely, something like XCOM would work perfectly with Oregon Trail, where your friends are all dead because they won't stop crapping everywhere.
Yeah. Or an MMO where you're all on the same trail and you
that could be interesting. You come across
every ruler.
Don't starve. Grabs some of those core tenants.
Anyway.
Also, shout out to the people making me an XCOM. I saw that in the Beyond group. They're sharing that. That's really awesome.
Yeah.
And yeah,
aviators on the battlefield.
It's night.
Yeah. So on that note, that was Beyond. You can find us all on Twitter as always, and be sure to check out the Facebook group. What did I say? Facebook. Yeah, I said it.
Groups.com.
Yeah, go to groups.com. That's the one. You know where to find us. And of course, check out the Beyond YouTube channel, youtube.com/IGNBeyond. We occasionally put up extra little bonus things. Marty, you and I have been playing Skyrim together.
Yeah.
You're very bad at that game.
I'm real terrible.
I
keep going into dungeons and getting too scared, and people are too good, and then I run away.
Yeah,
very little progress for the dozens of hours.
We just became level four,
but
we've made seven episodes.
Unbiased party.
So hit youtube.com/IGN and look for the Welcome to Skyrim playlist. And then of course, we all do a lot of stuff. Brian, what are you doing these days?
Let's see. I mean, you and me do Up at Noon every week.
That's right. We do that show.
NBC. We got some cool guests coming to Up at Noon in the next few weeks, so we're working stuff out. Oh yeah, we can't announce that one yet, but we will soon. It's a personal favorite of mine.
Horatio Sands.
Kevin Kline
from that boat cruise movie is coming on. He's doing boat
Cuba?
Cruise too.
SNL.
You got Cuba?
Yeah, Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not really Cuba Gooding. We just booked a guy named Gooding Cuba Gooding Jr.
Dornbush, where can people find you? What do you do?
You can find me on Twitter at @JMDornbush. I write the news. That's all I got.
All right.
Also, Kingdom Hearts. Just more Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, you're the news, Raji.
You keep busy.
The news. I'm writing all the news.
It's late
it's
Wednesday
very
night.
Busy for me.
So your review is probably up of Kingdom Hearts?
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Okay. Say the title one more time.
Kingdom Hearts HD 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue.
Beautiful. All right.
Back cover.
And of course, we're all on Twitter. I'm Max Scoville. Marty, you're McBiggity's, the 2 G's and 2 T's.
Yes.
Brian, you're Agent Bizzle, and you said you're JM Dornbush.
Yes.
Beautiful. Beyond. That's it. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Beyond.
The end.
The end of the show.
Final ending prologue. The edition
0 points
is over.
Two and a half stars.
The end.
On iTunes.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over 1 million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.